And welcome to Gillespie. I am your host, Josh Gillespie. With me is Mark Warner. I'm glad everyone could join us this evening here on FTRradio.com. We should have a pretty good show tonight. Mark and I are just going to be kind of chit-chatting back and forth, but of course we always look forward to hearing what you have to have in mind. You know, give us feedback there in the chat or even on our blogs on HoosierAccess.com or JoshGillespie.net. But I kind of want to get right to it. I want to talk about rhinos for a second. Rhino, you know, Republican in name only. It's a clever term. One we often hear thrown around by many on our side, and one that is often used to attack those who aren't considered conservative enough by many on the far right. It's also a term that many of you will likely use to describe me by the time I'm finished making my point. One thing that's incredibly obvious to me after this month's election is that the conservative message is very strong. Certainly, one could argue that many races were won due to a tremendous lack of enthusiasm on the part of Democrats, and I won't argue that. But there's no denying that our message certainly resonated with voters and with the American people, a point borne out by survey after survey showing that increasing numbers of Americans consider themselves as conservative. Here's another thing that's incredibly obvious after this most recent election. Our bench strength is remarkably thin, and that's what I want to address here. As the election of Barack Obama has demonstrated, way too many voters believe that simply having the right message is what counts, regardless of the background or resume or the messenger. This idea that the message trumps everything else isn't just restricted to Democrats. It's an idea which has infected the Tea Party movement as well. Wouldn't it have been fantastic to come away from this election having picked up at least three more Senate seats, including defeating Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid? Do you not think that those additional seats would come in handy the next time judicial nominees come before the court? Unfortunately, in some states, Delaware in particular, Republicans nominated candidates who wouldn't normally win a local school board race. The candidates who won those Republican primaries did so because they were able to repeat the correct message so many times that voters never bothered to examine the resumes of the wannabe legislators, and it certainly showed. Here's the problem. Mr. Smith Goes to Washington is a movie. It wasn't intended to serve as inspiration for people who seem to think that merely saying the right things actually qualifies you to carry those ideas out in our name. Or as Peggy Noonan recently wrote, not only the message is important, but the messenger. It's easy to get caught up in the excitement of seeing someone we identify with on a personal level seek higher office. It's also a little frustrating for me that so many people think that holding higher office is merely being able to shake enough hands and smile at the right times. Sadly, we as voters too often believe that it is. What happened to this idea that one should actually earn their way into the public arena? Why don't we demand that those who seek to lead us have already shown leadership in other areas? We wouldn't choose a doctor for our children based on a likability alone. Why would we put someone in the Oval Office based on that trait alone? Ronald Reagan is one of my personal heroes, and arguably one of the best presidents in modern American history. He led us out of the malaise of the Jimmy Carter years, restored both our economy and our sense of pride as a nation. All this while forcing the Soviet Union to surrender the Cold War. Despite Governor Sarah Palin's slight of President Reagan, dismissing him as an actor and reminding us that he once played in Bedtime for Bonzo, she missed a far greater point about President Reagan. He sought leadership positions at every opportunity. He was a well-respected leader of one of the nation's most influential unions and was admired for it. He spent 8 years traveling the nation on behalf of GE, often giving several speeches a day that he wrote himself. He penned columns for numerous newspapers, again his own writings, before challenging a very popular and allegedly unbeatable liberal governor in a state much larger and far more important than Alaska. After serving two very successful terms, he daringly challenged and nearly defeated an incumbent president of his own party before completely reshaping and mainstreaming the modern conservative movement. Then he became president. In contrast, Sarah Palin couldn't even complete her term as governor, choosing to resign. George Washington was the man who literally defined what the American presidency was, a man of such leadership ability that he once quelled an army rebellion by merely putting his glasses on to read a letter. He was a man who could be used as the very definition of what an American success story really is. I'm hoping that Americans want a little more George Washington and a little less Sarah Palin or Christine O'Donnell when looking for a leader. After all, leadership isn't a character trait developed by merely seeking platforms to promote oneself. If that truly were the case, Barack Obama would be the 21st century George Washington, and isn't that an absurd thought? Let the rhino attacks begin. You know, Mark, I've just had this sense of frustration since the election, knowing that, you know, we could have won more seats. We should have won more seats. But then I look at sometimes at the candidates that were chosen, and I think, you know, we made poor choices. And maybe all this stems back to 2008, you know. We had a candidate in John McCain who no one really was excited about. He chose a vice presidential candidate that really excited the base. And I'll admit that I was part of that, you know, I was part of that movement that was really behind Sarah Palin. Heck, I even contributed to a blog that that defended Sarah Palin to these liberal and mainstream media attacks. Because, you know, I was a fan of hers. She excited me. She was a young, fresh face, one who could easily excite a crowd, could motivate us, could say things. She threw red meat at the crowd, and you'd get excited. And I was, you know, even after the election and Team McCain decided to throw Sarah Palin under the bus and wanted to blame her for the loss of the 2008 election, frankly, I think anyone can understand that Palin was the reason that McCain did as well as he did.
Right.
But, you know, after she came out in defense of Ted Stevens when the Department of Justice ruled, dropped the charges against him, you know, the very same Ted Stevens who was part of the Alaskan establishment, which she fought so vigorously against, you know, Ted Stevens was no fan of Sarah Palin's. And here she was to come out and defend him and say, oh, we need to do the election all over again because the Department of Justice dropped the charges. That doesn't mean that Ted Stevens wasn't guilty. It just means that they decided to drop the charges. For whatever reason, I can't explain, but they did. But the tipping point for me that basically led me to believe that Sarah Palin is no future presidential leader, at least yet,
and
was when she decided to resign as governor.
Well, and I was just going to say that because, look, I like Sarah. I think she's a good person. I think Sarah is can bring a group of people together. But to even consider her for presidential in 12 would be a disaster for the Republicans.
Absolute disaster.
Because I could write the commercials right now for the Democrats. You know, you want this person leading the country when she couldn't even finish out her own term as a governor.
And let's not, you know, let the well, fact that, I mean, she's...
So much more than they could write on. But, and here's my thing. I think she would make I like Michael Steele. You know, I don't know when his term is up, but...
It's about to be up. He's already gotten a challenger.
Right. I think she would make a great RNC chair. And here's why I say this.
Well, she could definitely raise the money.
She's stringent just a little bit. Here's why I say this. Because she can bring in people to the party that normally won't give to the party or refuse to give to the party.
But Well,
hold on.
Okay.
Let me finish. She can bring a group of people into the, and I'm not saying as a leadership position or, but she can bring that money into the party. She's a great fundraiser.
Yes.
The woman can fundraise, and that's what I'm talking about. As far as fundraising goes, she's a phenomenal fundraiser, and I think the RNC would be smart to at least bring her on as a fundraiser. If not RNC chair, but as a fundraiser. Mm-hmm. She's good at raising money. And she could bring money into the RNC. I think she could. Because she's proven that she can raise money. But as far as anything presidential, even vice president, I'm not for. And I know that's not a big secret to a lot of people, but...
You know, I think she could have definitely helped her image a lot more as far as leadership, in my opinion. If, instead of Joe Miller, she had decided to challenge Lisa Murkowski in Alaska for Senate. You know, right. I could see her giving up her governor seat for that. And yeah, right. She would have won that primary. Would Lisa Murkowski have pulled the same dirty trick against Joe Miller that she did, you know, and wanted to do a write-in campaign? Probably not, because I think she would have, Sarah Palin would have thumped her in the primary.
Well, and here's what ticks me off about that race. This is why I like Indiana and the sore loser law.
Yes.
Because look at what... I mean, look, if you lose the primary, look, you lost. Mm-hmm. You know, move on, go do something else. But what she's doing is she's causing dissension where it doesn't need to be gone. And to me, that shows me that she just wants to hold that seat. She wants nothing else to do. She's comfortable in that seat. That shows me that she is not out for the voters. She is out for herself.
Exactly.
That's exactly what that tells me, and it's pathetic in politicians. It's pathetic in politics, and it needs to stop.
Absolutely.
And that's why I like the sore loser law in Indiana, because, I mean, you cannot continue. I mean, what is this costing the taxpayers right now in Alaska?
Who knows?
By doing this, and if you were in it to serve the public, you wouldn't be doing this.
That's right. Well, you know, we've actually come to the end of our segment. I think we should take this into our next segment. I think we got a good conversation here because, frankly, I think we've been getting to strike a balance between exactly what is a rhino, you know, what is establishment. Because I know, Mark, you and I have people like to label us as both of those for some reason I can't understand.
Yeah,
but at least some of our local friends, they definitely like to label us with those labels. But anyway, we'll come right back after these messages, and we'll continue this discussion because I think it's important that we have it.
Right.
And we'll be right back after these messages.
Hey Gillespie fans, this is Fingers Tiberius Molloy. Listen to The Snark Factor with Fingers Molloy every Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time only on FTR Radio. And check out my website, fingersmolloy.com.
Thanks for sticking around with me tonight is Mark Warner. Before our break, Mark and I were really getting into the conversation of the quality of a candidate and basically how, you know, when you look at someone like Governor Palin, and we know that as soon as someone says something even remotely negative about her, that all of a sudden it's, you know, rhino, rhino, when all we're trying to do is make a point. I remember that being an issue when she was running as vice president, although I thought at the time, because she was our vice presidential candidate, we should be sticking by her, just as you want to stick by the candidate, the whole ticket, really. But, you know... She's not running for anything now, but still, it's as if she is, and so if you say anything negative about her, you're automatically dismissed. Same thing if you say anything negative about Glenn Beck, you know. Well,
and I would like to address the issue of Rhino for a minute.
Yeah, go ahead, yes.
And I know some people are joking around and having their fun, and I get that, but I am far, far from being a Rhino.
Well, it's a serious charge.
It is. I grew up a Reagan conservative. Okay? I mean, my grandpa raised me, and my father is a Reagan conservative. I mean, that's just what I was raised.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you will honor and respect Ronald Reagan to the fullest extent of the law.
Yeah.
Was. I mean, Ronald Reagan was to be respected. And let me just address my political stances right now. I am a strong fiscal conservative. Strong fiscal conservative. Abortion life is always going to be an issue for me. I think we should put that on the table and should never be off the table. Gay marriage, y'all know my stance. Either way.
I think that's where you get your the where people get calling you a rhino.
Right. But hold on. I would like to address the issue of the Constitution for a second. All year I've heard, I follow the Constitution, and I agree with that. But let's really look at it for a second. And look at my politics and call me a rhino. I would never, ever vote for a Supreme Court nominee who likes abortion and hates guns.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? If I was an elected official, I would never, ever vote against any life. I would vote for any life issue on the table. I would vote fiscally sound policies. I am far from being a rhino. And for some people that are joking around, fine, I get it, we're friends, cool. But some people take that very seriously, and then I continue to get hate mail, as I got today as of last night's conversation.
Really?
Yeah, I got some hate DMs and a couple hate emails.
Really?
Yeah.
Over what? And,
right. And what the one charge was, you know, I thought you were different. I said, what do you mean? Well, you're a rhino. First of all, do you even know what a rhino is?
What, are some people just stalking on Twitter?
I think so. And my thing is, and I know they were joking around last night.
Yeah, we were joking around with you.
What's that?
We were joking around with you. Although,
and I get that. And I laugh about it. I actually just tweeted before we started recording the second segment, and I thank those two for giving me hate email last night.
Well, see, and, now I'm getting on Twitter just to find out what you said.
Right. So, and here's my thing. I am far from being a rhino, but, and here's my other side of it. A lot of people question why I don't say a lot on Twitter about politics or attack people on our side of the aisle. I work for a company that does stuff for these people.
Oh, see, Mark, now you're just part of the problem.
Well, right.
You're a dirty consultant.
Right. So here's my issue. It isn't good business to sit there and attack the people that pay you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's just, it's not. And I won't go that route. I just won't do it. Now, have I written about some stuff that probably I shouldn't have? I probably should have stayed away from the issue. Yeah, I should have. But also, I put on my Twitter page and on my Facebook page, my opinions on my own, they do not reflect my employer. But I still do not sit there and attack people like some people are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that just comes with maturity and growing up and working for a company that is solid on those issues.
Yeah.
And it just, call me fat, call me stupid, whatever, but don't call me a rhino, because that's not what I was raised to be, and I will never be that. And that's it. And I know I joked around with you over a year ago, and that went over the top.
Yeah, all you did was send one innocent tweet in all honesty. And then some loser out there decides to start sending DMs to people calling me a rhino.
Right.
What was funny is that they sent the same thing to like everyone they were following, and I was one of the followers, and so I got that DM. And I was like, what?
And I don't joke around about that anymore because I know how it can get misconstrued.
Oh yeah.
Most people that know me know that I'm not a rhino, but I just thought I felt like saying that because I got a lot of attacks this past primary.
Mm-hmm.
So I got a lot of people going, it's like, well, hold on.
You supported this candidate. That makes you a rhino. Which is just ridiculous. You know, this particular election cycle, emotions were high, nerves were frayed from the very beginning.
Right.
And a lot of that has to do with the way that Washington has been going. I mean, you look at the way that Obama has been jamming down legislation that Americans don't want. I mean, it's funny to me that Obama comes out and says, you know what, it wasn't my bills. It wasn't my legislation that people were against. It was the way we communicated. Wait a minute. I thought he was supposed to be the next great communicator. You know, all he had to do is say, yes, we can, and he won over a country. How could he not communicate his message on healthcare? The fact is his healthcare plan sucked. No one wanted it, and he pushed it through. Cap and trade, thankfully, it died a slow death. After being passed out of the House, that it doesn't look like it's going to be brought up in the upcoming lame duck session. I mean, I keep my fingers crossed, but, you know, it looks like that'll die. The stimulus package has been an utter failure. And he's talking about, you know, oh, my communication sucked. But, you know, you have people out there, you have specifically Republicans. And the thing is, you look at the Republicans that are targeted. You look at the Mike Castle, who ran in Delaware in the Republican primary to become a senator. He got a far-right challenger in Christine O'Donnell. Am I surprised about that? No, not particularly. But, frankly, and this is probably where I'll get called a rhino. Not only will I be called a rhino, I'll be called the establishment. I'll be an establishment rhino. In that, you know, I wasn't for Mike Castle. I wasn't for Christine O'Donnell when we're talking pre-primary. I didn't want a Mike Castle because I knew Mike Castle would just be a Lincoln Chafee. But when you're telling me that, and you look at the numbers and say that if Mike Castle wins, we have a good chance of taking the Senate back, we get a Republican seat, we take back Joe Biden's seat, you know. Which I mean, just think about this. Remember all the hubbub there was when Clinton lost Arkansas, or when George Bush won Arkansas and Tennessee in 2000. You know, they're like, oh, he took out the president and the vice president in their own backyard. And, you know, just think of it this time. We got Barack Obama's Senate seat, and we had a chance to take Joe Biden's Senate seat. And what do? We put up someone like Christine O'Donnell, who can't win in Delaware. Frankly, yeah. I don't think she would have won in Indiana. I don't think she would have won in Utah. I don't think she would have won, and you put her in the most conservative of states, and I don't think she would have won.
It was about decision points, Josh. Decision points.
What it was, I mean, what floored me, and sometimes this was always my frustration with the Tea Party movement, which, mind you, I have always been supportive of the Tea Party movement. I think it has been absolutely needed in our country, and has brought the especially members of the United States House. They've taken things very seriously, and you know they're you know, they got the Tea Party caucus chaired by Michelle Bachmann, and they're really pushing Tea Party principles. They've even established a new position for Kristi Noem, who is a Tea Party candidate out of South Dakota, a freshman who won, took out a Democrat, Stephanie Herseth Sandlin. They've created a special position just for her. They don't do that for freshmen. It kind of reminds me of the Distinguished Gentleman with Eddie Murphy. But anyway, but the thing is, they get it in the House. But, you know, like I've said before, you couldn't expect a far-right Christine O'Donnell type, who had no experience, and in her first campaign set ad, first thing that out of her mouth says, "I am not a witch." You can't expect that to win. I'm sorry. You know, everybody applauded Christine O'Donnell. Everybody on the right applauded Christine O'Donnell. That was a fabulous ad. She says, "I am not a witch." You know what? I'm thinking, if that's the first thing you got to say to win a campaign, your chances are shot. You're not going to win. But you know what? We got to take this in. We got to take this into the next segment. We've run out of time here. Keep on sticking around with us. You're listening to Gillespie on FTRRadio.com. We'll be right back. Hey everyone, it's Josh Gillespie of FTRRadio.com's Gillespie. Hey, have you ever been out and realized that you're about to miss your favorite FTR program? I'll tell you what you're going to do. You download the Shoutcast app to your smartphone. That way you will never miss another FTR show. So if you think you're going to be out and you're about to miss Fingers Malloy and the Snark Factor, you're about to miss Jenny Erickson, or you're about to miss the Loud Talker, the Needle, have no fear. Download the Shoutcast app. Hey, you can even listen to my show, Gillespie, airing every Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. on FTRRadio.com. Download the Shoutcast app today. And welcome back to Gillespie. I'm here with Mark Warner. We're together here on FTRRadio.com. Mark, you know, we got into a pretty good discussion here talking about rhinos and candidate credentials and messaging and messengers. And, you know, we want to take a step back here and kind of focus on the news of the last week to a certain degree. And that has been about President George W. Bush and his book tour. As listeners to our show know, we've spoken with two people who are deeply involved in President Bush's in the final years of President Bush's presidency, in his press department with Dana Perino and Pete Seat. And you know, I've yet to get decision points. I have a feeling it's going to be a Christmas gift. I won't get it as quickly as I got the Karl Rove book, but I also haven't been able to see all the interviews because, well, I don't have cable and I don't have DVR. So when I was interviewing Pete Seat last week, I missed President Bush's interview with Matt Lauer. But, Mark, you've actually seen a number of these. In fact, you've kept the interview with President Bush and Sean Hannity on DVR, and you keep on watching it. What's been your impression of President Bush post-presidency, I guess?
Well, like I told you earlier, it's about, I have a deep respect for George W. Bush. The man loves his country. He loves his family. He has deep integrity. He went through a lot in his 8 years of his presidency. 9/11, Katrina, the financial meltdown. He went through a lot of stuff. And when he was talking with Sean Hannity, it was, you know, he told Sean, "I love my country. You know, Laura and I are very involved with the troops. You know, we had moms for troops over at our house for dinner. And we've hosted events. We've went to the Dallas airport to welcome home troops from Afghanistan and Iraq." And I've seen that video, and it's powerful. And I don't see our current president being like this. But I know he's a flaming liberal, but when I see a president just love his country like he does, like President Bush does, he does. He has a deep, found respect for this country, and he loves it. I could see Sean and Matt Lauer kind of, you know, pressing him to say something about the current administration, but he wouldn't do it. He's like, "I've seen presidents in the past do it, and I just won't do that." He brought up a situation where when his father was president, how he was, you know, talking to the UN about getting, you know, Saddam Hussein out of Kuwait and, you know, quitting that, you know, get him out of there. This isn't right.
Yeah.
And former President Jimmy Carter lobbying against him and telling the leaders not to get involved.
Mm-hmm.
You don't do that to a current sitting president. I don't I don't care if you like his policies or not. If you have any respect at all, you know what it's like to sit in that seat and in that office and how hard it is. You don't do that. I don't like the current president's policies. I hate them.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're worthless. He doesn't. I mean, if he does have a deep love for America, he doesn't show it very well. But I would never, ever attack him personally like some people have, his family and his kids, his wife, I believe. But throughout the interviews, you know, Bush was just like, you know, I made a lot of decisions that I wish I could go back and say I do differently. Of course I do.
Decision points, Mark. Decision points.
What's that?
Decision points.
Yeah, decision points, Josh. but he was like, I have peace in my life. I don't regret a lot of things that I said or did. And I have to live with those decisions. And, you know, I saw the left this week just go after him. Oh, he plagiarized his book. He used quotes from other books that were written by his counter staff and blah. So shut up.
Yeah, I have to say, I saw, you know, actually it was on Saturday Night Live. The first thing that they had to talk about was plagiarism. And I'm like, really? Seriously? This is what the attacks that we're making is, you know, is we're attacking a former president for plagiarism because he's citing, former staffers' books. That's ridiculous.
Well, and here's my thing. You know, look, first of all, don't tell me that any former president that wrote books didn't use quotes from the other books that their staffers wrote. Okay? Lefties are starting to really get on my last nerve. And all they do is, you're a racist because you don't like Obama. Guess what? I love black people, okay? Dude, quit calling me a racist. And if I am one, I hate everybody. It's across the board.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You accuse me of being a racist, and I will tell you it's across the board with everyone. I hate everybody. And if they're lying, they can whatever. But it's his policies I don't like. Do I like it in Bush did? No, I don't. But you know what? At least as president, he had some type of... he called Sean in one part of the interview. He's like, Sean, people didn't elect me because I was there. Oh, what was the guy's name he said? It wasn't Einstein, but it was somebody else. I was like, well, yeah, I guess that's true. And he joked around about it. He goes, you know, people, you know, poke fun at me, and they did everything they could, and, you know, called me names, but I just did what I had to do as the President of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And then Sean brought up the weapons of mass destruction. And he goes, are you still upset about that? I was like, yeah, I'm still upset about it. He goes, and look, President Clinton had intelligence. Even his own Congress wanted to do it. And he goes, and if I'll tell you something, he goes, Congress on the other side told me to go after it.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, and they had the same intelligence I had. He goes, I don't buy it. And this is, it's what, there's a part in his book about weapons of mass destruction. And then I have a deep respect for him.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, and I guess it's his love for country.
Well, I'll tell you, the few minutes I saw of his Lauer interview, you know, I don't know. It's in a sense, it was a bit comforting, you know. Even though, you know, I was very supportive of the president during his first term, his second term he started doing things that I wasn't necessarily all that excited about. I continued to support him because he was our president. But, you know, seeing him on TV, it was like, man, I miss you. You know,
right.
And you know, why do I miss him? Because, you know, things may have been not so great that those last 4 years, and especially the last year specifically. I mean, I guess you could look at as our economy was starting to have its downward turn. But, you know, I saw him and I was like, that guy, you know, he used to be our president. And I have a great deal of respect for him because, one, you could tell that he still had a great deal of respect for even his enemies, you know, as he was speaking. You knew he still had a love for his country. And, yeah, I mean, you hear about all these things that he does even though he's not president, you know, such as still meeting with the soldiers as they come back from Iraq and meeting with the mothers of the fallen. And I mean, he continues to live, and you can see it in his face to a certain degree. He still lives with the burden of the decisions that he made.
Well, yeah, and he's always going to live with those.
And, you know, I look at President Obama, and I think that, you know, the decisions that he's made, you know, they haven't been about the country. They've been about his
life.
They've been about
right.
him. Because, frankly, you know, we were heading into, and we've been in a gigantic tailspin. And even his own advisors and members of his own party have said, you really need to focus on the economy rather than healthcare. And, you know, it's just frustrating to know that, you know, when President Bush came into office in 2001, one of the things that he was starting to focus on was healthcare. And, you know, it got derailed. And not
right.
because of Congress, but because we got attacked. And the focus of our nation just completely altered. And even though he tried to bring us back, and, you know, even during that first term, we had No Child Left Behind in the Medicare bill. Two things that I'm not necessarily a big fan of.
Right.
I mean, massive increases in congressional spending and, you know, in increasing our debt. You know, that is also part of the legacy of George W. Bush that I'm not necessarily fond of. But when I look at him as a leader, you know, I saw him as a leader. And what's funny to me is that you look at the polls that are coming back now, that when people poll George W. Bush and they poll Barack Obama, their numbers right now are pretty daggone close. And,
right. And the thing is with President Bush, he's just a great man of honor. I mean, he stood up in a hard time and got accused of being a racist. He got accused of hating black people. He got accused of a lot of stuff that was downright sticking that he got accused of. But Kanye West apologized to him, you know, the other morning on the Today Show with Matt Lauer. And even Matt Lauer, after the interview, saw his tweet, and Kanye was cussing out Matt Lauer. I didn't believe he did that to me. Blah, blah, blah. But I appreciate the people that went after him during his presidency. And maybe they didn't go after him, you know, verbally, and they did, but they did it in a way that a normal voter couldn't tell.
Mm-hmm.
But he's sitting down with those people selling his book.
Yeah.
You know, where President Obama refuses to sit down with anybody that says, you know, well, I don't like your policies. Well, then you're done. Well, guess what, Biden? You're going to have to learn to work across the aisle this time or you're toast.
Yeah.
And he's going to have to. He's going to have to work across the aisle with the Republicans. And if he doesn't, he's toast in 12.
It's funny. Douglas Sean, or Sean, I can't remember exactly how you spell his name. You've seen him on Fox News. Apparently.
Yeah.
He came out recently and I believe I saw the link on Drudge, but even he said that Obama should be a one-termer. He should not run for re-election. And I would encourage anyone to Google that, Douglas, Sean, and Obama. It's amusing. I mean, this is just more and more people are. They're upset with his, you know, with his leadership abilities, and they're just, you know,
he's not a good leader.
Yeah,
he's not a good leader. And the thing is, he would make a better leader if he would just learn to listen.
Yeah.
And now on the Bush tax cuts, he's like, I'll compromise. No, you should just extend them.
Yeah.
You're compromising on this. You need to just extend them and move on, because you know Boehner won't compromise with you on this.
Mm-hmm.
And people that are fresh up on the Hill, I can name several right now that will not compromise on the Bush tax cuts.
That's right.
Todd Rokita. Todd Young.
Newest members of Congress, absolutely.
Yeah, right. I actually talking to one of Marlon Stutzman's people the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And they go, if they think he's going to compromise on the Bush tax cuts, are crazy.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's the class we're taking in.
Yep.
And
well, I hate to cut you off, Mark, here, but we've come towards the end of the segment. Let's pick this right up here in the next segment, maybe even touch on, discussed this topic before, but, you know, potential POTUS candidates for the Republican side. We'll be back right after these messages. Stories. We all love them, and we all have them. Whether you're a candidate, public office, or a small business, you have a story which is incredibly unique to you. The problem isn't having a story, the problem is how to tell your story. And that's where my friend Jacob Berry comes in. Jacob is a gifted storyteller who has the added bonus of being an experienced campaign professional, marketer, sales professional, and small business owner. Not only can he put the right words together, he knows exactly what needs to be said and how to say it. So the next time you need a speech, sales letter, article, or marketing piece, trust the professional I go to. Trust Jacob Perry. You can reach him on the web at www.jacobperry.us. Give him a call at 772-678-0820. That is 772-678-0820. Or drop him a line at jacob@jacobperry.us. To Gillespie. You're here listening to Josh Gillespie and Mark Warner on FTRradio.com. We've been having a good discussion tonight, guys, for our listeners. And in our previous segment, you know, Mark and I were talking about President George W. Bush and his leadership, and talking about Barack Obama and his leadership. And Mark, you were talking about in the last segment, as we were closing the end, about, you know, how Barack Obama is going to have to learn how to work with this new Congress. And
yes.
But here's the thing about the Bush tax cut extensions, is that Barack Obama isn't working with a Republican Congress on the Bush tax cut extensions. He's still working with Democrats. Because if the tax cuts aren't extended before January 1st, they go up. Taxes go up. Now, could the incoming Congress work towards extending them then? Well, yes. But, you know, the fact is that if nothing changes before January 1st, taxes will skyrocket. And you think of the inheritance tax. It's at 0% right now. It's going to go to 55% on January 1st at 12:01.
Well, and that's yeah.
No one better.
Well, here's the thing.
I'm just saying.
our freshman congressman that are going in from this state, the only one that's really there now in voting is Congressman Sussman.
Yeah, that's right. He gets sworn in next week.
Right. And so he already has a budget, he already has an office, and he already has set up. And that's a good thing that we got at least one freshman congressman in there that can actually vote now and work towards trying to get this Bush tax cuts extended. The thing is, you know, we have Pelosi with her big, arrogant head going, well, the Bush tax cuts didn't work because job growth didn't happen, so it didn't work. And it's like, look, first of all, lady, you're the type of person that says that we need to stimulate the economy with unemployment.
That's right. The best thing that can happen for our economy is unemployment. That's just great.
Yeah.
Here's your sign.
I get that there's some stupid people out there. I get that.
Yeah.
Okay, that don't understand economics and, you know. But you're the Speaker of the United States House of Representatives. And you're telling me you're not that stupid. But again, maybe you are.
The woman, I want to say she is, because she's running for minority leader, and after the outgoing Democrats who lost sent a combined letter saying, don't run again. You cost us.
She doesn't get it.
She doesn't get it.
This is the same lady that stood up and go, well, we have to pass it so you know what's in it.
I mean, you know, it's this is the party of change, right? This the same party that is going to be keeping the same leadership around, and in fact creating a new position so that they can still keep the same leadership around, specifically for Congressman Clyburn of South Carolina. You know, Pelosi is going to be minority leader, and Steny Hoyer is going to be whip. And just so that Clyburn doesn't lose any seniority, they're creating a position for him. Why? Because that leadership of Pelosi, Hoyer, and Clyburn was so effective.
Well, you know, that's the thing. It's like, you know what? That's fine. If they want to elect her to be minority leader, great. You go right ahead, boys and girls. Go ahead and make it happen.
Well, what's funny to me is that, you know, in the weeks leading up to the November election, the RNC was running their campaign of Fire Pelosi all across the country. And now they got a big sign that says Hire Pelosi. You know? Because
I know, it's great. And Michael Steele came up there and said, hey, we welcome it.
That's right.
You know, we welcome it. I mean, we got her fired. And I mean, go ahead and hire as minority leader. Hey, you know, no problem.
Good for us. That's right.
We'll support it. I mean, we'll stand behind you guys 100%.
Cracks me up.
Let's talk about POTUS for a second.
Yeah, because we only have a few
Let's talk about 2012 and how Mitch Daniels will run and win.
Oh, dude, I'm sorry. I know. I'm still not. I'm not against it. I'm not against the idea. I want to make that clear, but I'm still not sold.
Josh?
Yes.
Do we have to have this discussion again?
Yes, we do.
Because if you do not get on board, you're either on or you're off. You can't be in the middle. You can't be wishy-washy and moderate on this issue.
The man hasn't said he's running yet. So I don't have to.
It doesn't matter. He's
got to
do it.
I don't have to give my vote to anyone right now.
You could be a part of the, Josh, just think, you could be part of the movement that when he does announce, you could say, hey, I was part of the Mitch 2012 movement.
But Mark,
I was part of getting him to convince him to run.
But Mark, what
do you want to be known as? Do you want to be known as the guy who said,
Here's my question.
You're going to be known as that guy.
But what if Mike Pence runs?
I'm all for it. But I don't see Mike Pence running.
Well, I don't see why Pete's running either. But I'm just saying, you know, I'm just saying
he's gonna run for governor.
You know, the one thing that Mark, the one thing that you and I can agree on about 2012 is that anybody who ran in 2008 or was part of a presidential ticket or is named Newt Gingrich shouldn't be running in 2012.
I agree with that statement, yes.
But, and frankly, when you take those people out, you know, we're not left with a lot of solid people. You know,
Mitch Daniels.
We have names out there like Tim Pawlenty, who's, I mean, you know, they're not that they're bad candidates, but my response is meh. And you know, I like Mitch. Mitch has been tremendous as governor. He's been the best thing since, honestly, I'll say it, he's been the best thing since sliced bread for Indiana. But I don't know, I'm still not convinced yet.
All right, we need to clearly have drinks about this.
Oh, of course we need to have drinks, and frankly, we need to bring in people like, you know, Fingers Malloy into this conversation. And
I think
you
would support my idea.
I think what we need to do is we need to bring in some of the smart girls who are upset over Mitch Daniels talking about a VAT tax. Because,
well,
you know, here's the thing.
I love the smart girls. The smart girls, I love them very much. But they don't exactly agree with me on the McDaniels thing.
Well, no, they don't. I can think of a couple people who got upset over Mitch's talk over a VAT tax. But see, they're upset over the VAT tax, but they keep on forgetting that Mitch also talked about the flat tax in association with the VAT tax. That he doesn't want to do a VAT all by itself. He wants to. He's willing to talk about things. He's willing to negotiate. He's willing to have an adult conversation on how to fix our economy. And frankly, completely revamping the tax system.
The thing is, some people are just jealous that they're not living in Indiana.
Well, yeah, and frankly, they should be because, despite our current situation in Indiana, which isn't the best, it's probably one of the best situations though in the entire country. You know,
we just got a 60-seat majority, and we got 60-40 in the state House of Representatives.
And the supermajority in the Senate. Democrats don't even have to show up for business to get done. That cracks me up, even still. Anyway, we don't get to really get into the depths of this conversation because we always run out of time. But we can.
Okay, here. Ooh, okay, fine. We have Tim Pawlenty.
We only got like 30 seconds left, but we got Tim Pawlenty, meh. We got Bobby
Dole, right.
Meh. We got Haley Barbour, meh. We got John Thune, meh. You know, I don't know.
All I have to say, to finish this conversation off, Josh, and I'll give you the last word, which is like going to be a second, is all I have to say is forrich.com. Switch to Mitch. As my friend Joe Nepper would say, switch to Mitch.
Switch to Mitch. How catchy. How catchy. I'm not ready to jump on that bandwagon because I don't have to yet. Mitch isn't even running. That said, I want people to stick around tonight for the rest of the FTR lineup. Following immediately the show, we have Duke Over America. If you don't stick around and listen to Duke Over America, you're doing yourself a disservice. And of course,
Duke is crazy.
And then the always an intelligent, always affable Jenny Erickson following Duke. And then Michael Fidenza, the armchair energist at 11. Thank you, everybody, for sticking around with us this week. I thank you, Mark Warner, for being part of the show tonight. Glad that you're back after a busy campaign season. We'll be back next week, and keep tuned here to FTRradio.com. I have been Josh Gillespie. With me has been Mark Warner. Thank you. We will see you again next week.